This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
What is going on with the Trump administration and the messaging we're hearing now? We're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about Obamacare. Can we replace it? What does that look like? All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's chat, shall we? Because my email inbox is full of your angry emails. Angry about the recent messaging coming out of the White House. So let's talk about what was said, theories I have on why it might be said, and maybe some of this will make you feel better. Some of it may very well make you feel worse. What is the thing that has you and me so angry? Trump sat down with Laura Ingraham, said a variety of things, but this one stands out.
And does that mean the H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration? Because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands
agree,
of foreign
but
workers.
You also do have to bring in talent. When
well, we
a
have
country
plenty of talented people
no,
here.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
We don't have talented
being,
people
no,
here.
No, you don't have certain talents, and you have to. People have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles, or I'm going to put
How did
you
we ever do it before?
All right. Look, that's indefensible. It's terrible. It's not America first. And it's most definitely not what you voted for. Donald Trump got elected for two main reasons: the economy and immigration. The American people were fed up, are fed up, with a bad economic situation where we've lost 20-25% of our buying power in the last 5 years, and the American people are fed up with the country being flooded with foreigners, legal and illegal. We are tired of competing with foreigners in the job market. We're tired of the crime, the dirt. We're tired of seeing foreign statue, fake gods being sprung up in places like Texas. The American people don't want to hear the Muslim call to prayer five times a day in Dearborn, Michigan. And that is a main reason, maybe the main reason, Donald Trump sits in the White House today. It's not a personality thing. It's not anything. The American people want it to stop. We have been the world's open sewer for a long time. They want it to stop. But this was not a one-off, you see. It wasn't just Donald Trump speaking maybe a little too off the cuff on Laura Ingraham. We have Christine Noem out there on the news saying things like this.
What is the administration's position on these visas?
Now, we're going to keep using our visa programs. We're just going to make sure that they have integrity, that we're actually doing the vetting of the individuals who come into this country, that they want to be here for the right reasons, that they're not supporters of terrorists and organizations that hate America. And that's what I think is so remarkable is under the Trump administration, we've sped up our process and added integrity to the visa programs, to green cards, to all of that. But also, more people are becoming naturalized under this administration than ever before. More people are becoming citizens.
What? You didn't vote for that. I didn't vote for that. They're bragging about how many people were coming in now. No. We're speeding everything up. More citizens than anyone. We're doing great. So let's talk. Because I have actually two theories on this. One, I think, will probably make you feel better. The other one is going to make you feel undoubtedly worse. So I pray it's option A. Before we talk about the two theories, I want to talk about Donald Trump for a moment, a discussion we've had many times before. Donald Trump deserves all the credit in the world for getting the America First movement rolling. He very much did. He has been the leader of the right for 10 years now and deserves credit for that. And he has laid a foundation that, Lord willing, will continue on for decades to come. Hopefully it's still there after I'm dead and gone and you're dead and gone. Still there, getting better, getting better. So he deserves all the credit in the world for that. However, Donald Trump is not this extreme, hardcore anti-communist. He never was. He's not now. We can pretend from time to time because he talks tough and he has some good ideas on things like immigration, but he's not that. Donald Trump is not the end. He's the beginning. He's the start of it. There will be more, others who come after. Maybe it's you. There will be many others who come after. Donald Trump is a businessman. He's a businessman, was a registered Democrat for much of his life. Remember, during his first term, Donald Trump attempted to work with Democrats on an amnesty bill. We've forgotten this before. So Donald Trump, at his core, is probably not as hardcore as you, but he's been good for the movement overall. That's one. Two, and this part's going to come into play on the bad portion of the theory. Do you remember the Jeffrey Epstein stuff? But specifically, do you remember when Donald Trump came out almost out of nowhere and started shouting at reporters to stop talking about it, stop asking about it? What are you talking about? No one cares. Shut up. It was almost out of left field, right? Why did he do that? Okay, we'll come back to that. Back to the first theory. Donald Trump oftentimes will land at the correct position of an issue because of you. Not because he came up with it on his own, because of you. He used to, at his rallies several times, he used to brag about the COVID vaccine. He loved it. He used to brag about it. You know why you never hear him say that anymore? He kept getting booed. He kept getting booed to the point he started asking friends, family members, advisors, why does everyone boo when I talk about it? Then they explained to him how many people had been hurt by it, lost their jobs. They explained to him, hey, you need to stop. And he stopped. To his credit, he stopped. Donald Trump oftentimes can have bad ideas like every other human being. And then you and me, we get angry enough and loud enough. He hears enough of it and he backs away. There's a chance Donald Trump has some perhaps big business interests, no doubt big business interests in his inner circle. Major business leaders, huge donors to his campaign. And what do they want? They want cheaper labor. It's been a big problem in the GOP for a very long time. And so when they hear guys like J.D. Vance or even Trump talk about getting rid of H-1B visas, well, they get concerned. They want that cheap labor. So what do? They pick up the phone. Hey, Mr. President, I still need those 50,000 people from India, if you don't mind. And those are the people in Donald Trump's ear. So he goes on with Laura Ingraham, gets asked about it, and then tries to sell it. But today, I have no doubt in my mind, the administration is well aware of how that's going to land. The good theory I have, remember I told you I have two, it's about to get ugly. The good theory I have is that this is one of these trial balloon things Donald Trump's floating out there. Maybe he even means it. But he's going to hear your white-hot rage and my white-hot rage, and he's going to say, okay, it's clearly not what my voters want. Let's back off of this whole thing. We can't be importing more foreigners when Americans can't afford things. That's the good part of the theory. The good part of the theory is this will pass because of your anger. Now, the bad part of the theory. Back to the Jeffrey Epstein thing. Why did Donald Trump, almost out of nowhere, it was weird, start yelling at everybody to stop talking about it? Move on. This is stupid. Why are we talking about this? Everyone shut up. Why? Well, because he was trying to get ahead of something. What he was trying to get ahead of, I don't know specifically, and neither do you. Is he concerned that there are names in that file that he doesn't necessarily want revealed? We know there are all kinds of names in those files that didn't do anything wrong, by the way. As I've told you several times before, Donald Trump himself, his name is in there, but didn't do anything wrong. There aren't even really any accusations of that. There's a bunch of people in there. The guy was a billionaire financier. There's all kinds of names of people who worked with him who aren't pedophiles. So what was Donald Trump trying to get ahead of? I don't know. Looking out for himself, a donor, a friend, the party? I don't know. I don't know. Neither do you. But he was very clearly trying to get ahead of something. Shut up. Don't talk about it. Let's move on. We're moving on. Donald Trump knows things that you don't know and I don't know. He knows them before we know them, I should say. That was him trying to get ahead of something. Now, here's the bad part of this theory I have. Donald Trump has a year. He is president of the United States of America. We do have the Senate, a majority, not a huge one, but we have a majority. We do have the House, a very thin majority. Donald Trump, and really anybody with any amount of political knowledge, or knowledge of political history, knows that we're probably going to lose the House in the midterms. When you look at the California redistricting, that various other things, plus historic trends, we probably lose the House in the midterms almost no matter what. What does that mean for Donald Trump? The man who is trying to get his face on Mount Rushmore, I don't know if he's actually trying to do that, but you understand what I mean. The man who's trying to write his name in the history books understands full well he has probably a year left for any chance of getting a law passed. Probably a year left. Okay. So, what to do? Well, he needs something passed. Every president wants a big signature piece of legislation passed. Every single one. Democrats do, Republicans do. But what kind of wonderful, hardcore anti-communist legislation could you possibly pass with almost no majority in the Senate? We need 60 votes, remember, and a very slim majority in the House. Well, it would have to be a piece of legislation with a lot of Democrat things in it. So, I pray to God I'm wrong, and I need to tell you that I have no inside knowledge of this, all right? This is a theory. I'm just looking at the history. I'm looking at what people are saying publicly. I'm trying to notice patterns. I think there might be an immigration bill coming, and not a good one. Oh, don't get me wrong, they'll make sure there's a bunch of money for the wall. Maybe some more ICE agents or something like that in there. And there will also be some Democrat priorities, some GOP big business priorities. No, build your wall, but we need another million people from China and India to come in here. Get rid of these pesky Americans who want wages. I pray to God I am wrong, but I think there's a chance over the next year a horrible immigration bill will hit the House floor. And when it does hit the House floor, get ready for a lot of people to try to browbeat you and me into supporting it, because they'll point out all the pro-border hawk stuff in there, and they'll conveniently leave out the other things like the mass importation of foreigners. Deporting 50 million people needs to be priority 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 for the Trump administration if they are truly interested in saving America from high costs, from high crime, health insurance, housing, all these problems. Not that they all get solved, but all these problems get so much better if you deport millions and millions of foreigners who've come into this country over the years. All these problems. If you, however, continue to import millions of foreigners, you will undoubtedly wake up one day without the United States of America. If you'd like to know how that can happen, look at the new mayor of New York City, elected pretty much exclusively by foreigners. American-born New Yorkers rejected him outright. The foreigners loved the free goodies, the free hands out, and now we have to watch our greatest city burn. I pray to God I'm right about theory one and wrong about theory two. But I guess we shall see. Nevertheless, let your voice be heard. Let it be loud. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a huge show for you tonight, a great show for you. Before we get to the rest of the show, I want to talk to you about your energy levels. What do you do when the day is done? It's 5, 6 o'clock. Maybe you're home from work, maybe kids just got home from school. Are you gassed? Just kind of done? Or are you ready to go? Feeling good, still in a good mood. You know, natural herbal supplements will ensure that you're good to go, in a great mood. Chalk's natural herbal supplements are the greatest I've ever had in my life. I personally take a male vitality stack every day. It's three things. They have female vitality stacks. They have chocolate powder to start your day with vitamins and minerals. They have more things than you can possibly imagine. But if you are looking to make your life better, take advantage of Chalk, a subscription, chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
You also do have to bring in talent.
We don't have certain talents and people have to learn.
Well, those comments are going over like a fart in church today, and we thought we should probably talk to Dave Brad about that. Joining me now, Senior Vice President of Business Relations at Liberty University. Dave, Donald Trump is not making many fans with his base with those kinds of things. He's already rolling Scott Bissett out there on the news to try to soften that landing, but people were concerned, Dave. Frankly, they're angry.
Yeah, no, they should be. The America First agenda, you know, Trump, he's feeling the pressure from all sides, right? All the corporate buddies are screaming at him, saying we want the cheap and easy route we've had to make our profits for Wall Street and Main Street. Sorry. And Bessent came out and said it's Main Street's turn. And so the whole country's waiting, right? I mean, they're being patient on the wars, Ukraine. We want that thing done. We want all the wars rolled up. We want to see this Department of Justice lay down the hammer and see some results come on in. And so this is a biggie, though. The immigration, the border, when you shut down the border, why are you doing that? And so, you know, I think he's going to feel some heat on this one.
Dave, I'm curious as to why. I have my own theories, though. The one that I really hope is not true is that we have an immigration bill coming that's going to be putrid because of our thin majority in the House, and this is Trump prepping the ground for that. I pray to God I'm wrong about that, but tell me why. Is it just what you just said? Is it his big business buddies in his ear? No, I don't want to pay wages.
Yeah, well, you know, just ask yourself similarly, why are we voting for a $7 trillion Biden budget again with a lot of Democrat stuff left in it with $2 trillion deficits? And the answer is because your representatives aren't representing the people. And so same thing on this. Most every, you know, especially just go around the horn, right? Go to any state with a bunch of golf resorts and hotels and whatever, and I'll guarantee it, those congressmen and senators and women are going to be pretty friendly to cheap labor. And they're just smacking their own people on the head. And when the president says we don't have the talent, we don't have the talent, right? I've been in education my whole life because the corporate guys are planting, you know, evergreen trees on their rooftops and ceilings as virtue signaling instead of investing into kids right down across the block from you, right? In Chicago, the poor kids, the literacy rate, the reading rate, right, for the third graders is 12%. That's not from rightwing.com, right? That's from the Illinois Public Policy Institute. And so, yeah, all these corporate guys, oh, we're in favor of ethics and we care and we got pink ribbons and we got all sorts of cool stuff. But the kids right next door can't read. We're for a diversity and race and gender and all those kids across all those categories right downstairs can't read. So, you know, I'm a little cynical, but if you want to change the country, you better teach the kids to read.
Dave, I understand that what we're about to talk about doesn't necessarily apply to Liberty University, of course, but Trump also said that we got to have these 600,000 Chinese students. We just got to have them. It's just wonderful for the country, and we certainly don't want any universities to go out of business. Well, the American people, certainly the MAGA movement, we don't want 600,000 Chinese spies, and we don't give a crap if half the university system goes out of business. Frankly, it should. What is this? Is this part of the trade deal we just struck with China, and he's just trying to sell it now?
No, this is probably, yes to that. But also, in addition, the tech bros are putting huge pressure, and they're the huge donors, right? The Magnificent Seven firms, the trillionaire class. What people may not know is about 75% of the Fortune 500 CEOs are Democrat. Most all of the Magnificent Seven trillionaires are leftist, and but they're big donors, and the Republicans don't have anyone left, right? We gave 20% of the economy away to Obamacare. And so, you know, it's kind of a survival thing. You know, we don't have Hollywood. We don't have education. You know, you mentioned Liberty University, et cetera. But what people, the average person doesn't know is the Chinese students have to sign a document, and all workers here, to the CCP, right? We don't hate the Chinese people, but the Communist Party we don't like. And they have to sign a document saying they're basically, in essence, spying, as you said, for the CCP. And so if they want to come over here, I think that if the CCP would sign a simple document saying that the CCP and the Chinese government believes like we do that all people are made in the image of God and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and they sign their name to that document, hey, welcome to the U.S. of A. But until you sign that document saying that, no way, Jose.
Trump also said this about the economy.
This is the greatest economy we've ever had. Their talking points, oh, costs are high. By the way, the only thing is beef. Beef.
Coffee.
Is a little high because the ranchers are doing great. Coffee, we're going to lower some tariffs. We're going to have some coffee come in. We're going to take care of all this stuff very quickly, very easily. It's surgical. It's beautiful to watch.
Dave, I understand that, and I'm totally fine with the Trump bluster thing. It's who he is. Frankly, it's endearing. Everything's the best ever, the most beautiful ever, the hottest ever. I get that that's Trump's way. I get that. But the economy is not good, and people recently could afford a lot more than they afford now. And telling people how great it is, it's a little insulting.
Yeah, well, I've tried to counsel whoever I can up there in the swamp that's advising the president. I never would have pivoted and cheerleaded that we own the economy, right? We had 20% inflation in Biden's 4 years, right? That's a ratchet effect, right? Unless you get deflation or disinflation, those prices stay there. And so we never should have started cheerleading and said, you know, we're going to lower price. That's the job of the Federal Reserve for the most part, right? The price level, to have stable prices. So that's the inflation debate. I never would have gone there. And then on productivity, I've been preaching for 10 years. Productivity's been going down for 70 years in a row. And so what Trump should say is, and I give him an A-plus on this thing, the major thing that enhances productivity and GDP growth and wages is capital investment. And that's where he's crushing it, right? That's where he's doing good. But he's got a big problem in the short run, right? Because that capital, right? 2 trillion U.S. commitments, 10 trillion foreign commitments coming in, that'll take a few years to get put in the workers' hands. And if you put capital in the American people's hands, they're going to do great things with it. They always have. Just think of Henry Ford or whatever, right? The American people are ready to roll. And so Biden put us in the ditch. The left has put us in the ditch. Our geopolitical strategists missed a country called China for the past 30 years. Got it all wrong. They're our friend. You know, their kids are going to be rich and become Democrat, you know, yuppies. Nope, they're still communists. And so I just never would have pivoted to, you know, saying I own this economy because economically, he doesn't, right? Monetary policy's got a year lag, and fiscal policy's got a year to a year and a half lag once it's implemented, right? And so that's the truth of economics.
Is this why he leans on Jerome Powell so hard? Is this why he just blasts away? Obviously, he's trying to push him into something. Is this what this is all about?
Yeah, well, that's right, because in the short run, he's just got a few levers, right? So if he can lower the interest rate, you know, that'll juice things up. And, you know, there's news out today, right? I saw the rental properties are more deflationary than we thought, which is bad news for the economy. But, you know, that maybe there is some wiggle room to lower rates, right? If you lower rates, the risk is you get inflation, right? So if inflation's at 3 instead of 2, and it should be 0, and so if you, you know, if you pump more money out there and lower interest rates, you get more inflation. But the, you know, I don't have time to get into it, but the Federal Reserve is a bunch of crooks, right? They've ruined the economy since 2008 with the financial crisis and the bailouts. and the Fed put. They always bail out the Greenspan put, bails out Wall Street, and no concern for the employment and wages of Main Street.
Dave, appreciate you as always, brother. All right. Obamacare. I didn't even have time to get into this with Dave, but healthcare costs are brutal. I don't have to tell you. We just renewed our insurance here at the office. It's just, it's brutal. What can we do? What can normal people do to try to save some money while getting healthcare? We'll talk to Dr. Cariotti about that in a moment. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you, speaking of health, about your gut. Your stomach needs help. It does, especially as you get older. Your stomach needs help. So many of our health problems come from our stomach. It's the fact. It's true. So what can you do? Well, cowboy colostrum. I start my day with cowboy colostrum in my coffee. That's what I do with it. You can use it, water, milk, whatever you prefer. I get the chocolate. I put it right in my milk or in my coffee. I have chocolate coffee every single morning. But it's not just the flavor. My stomach works better. No more bloating, no more feeling bad, bobbled, no more of that. Try the best colostrum. Try colostrum from Cowboy Colostrum, and your day is going to get better. Your gut is going to feel so much better. It's not one of those things where you just kind of have to hope it's working. Go to cowboycolostrum.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
We will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period.
If you like your doctor or health care plan, you can keep it.
Nothing in this plan will require you or your employer to change the coverage of the doctor you have.
The only change you'll see are falling costs as our reforms take hold.
If you like your healthcare system and your doctor, the only thing reform will mean to you is your healthcare will cost less.
I will not sign a plan that adds one dime to our deficits, either now or in the future.
It is a cost that will not, I repeat, will not add to our deficits.
We'll eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse in our healthcare system, but we'll also take on key causes of rising costs, saving billions while providing better care to the American people.
Well, that was all a freaking lie. Thanks to Tom Elliott at Grabian for all that, by the way. Joining me now, the great Dr. Aaron Cariotti, author of the book Making the Cut. Doctor, people, especially younger people, they don't even remember what healthcare was like before Obamacare. I remember going to a family doctor, and he actually talked to me instead of facing the computer the entire time. What was healthcare like back in the day?
That's right. And I think the folks who were around when Obama was saying those things and believed him, perhaps voted for him, perhaps supported the so-called Affordable Care Act, I would imagine can't help watching a clip like that and putting their face in their palm and thinking, well, no, none of that turned out to be true. In fact, the exact opposite turned out to be true. I didn't keep my doctor. My health insurance premiums went up. We didn't cut out the bureaucratic middleman. Those administrative costs in healthcare have only ballooned. And I'm getting care that feels much less personalized. So yes, there was a time when you'd go to the physician and instead of staring at a computer screen and checking boxes and asking questions that had very little to do with your chief complaint, that were in fact dictated by outside forces, by managerialist forces, whether those were coming from Medicare and Medicaid at the federal level or enormous corporate conglomerates that had swallowed up the local hospital or the local healthcare clinic. People had personal relationships with their physicians not that long ago. Their physicians looked at them, examined them, asked them questions about the thing that they brought in to get help with. And all of that, unfortunately, has gone out the window. And doctors are frustrated. Doctors are leaving medicine or retiring early in droves. I have stats on this in the opening chapter of The New Abnormal. Patients are clearly unsatisfied with the current status quo. So those promises were made, obviously failed to deliver on those promises. And now we're left with a system in which the bloat of the middleman has grown to enormous proportions. In fact, if you take all the people in medicine that have some face-to-face contact with patients, doctors, nurses, x-ray technicians, the front office staff, anyone who, you know, looks a patient in the face and says hello, and then you take all the people in the healthcare bureaucracy that never have any face time, any face-to-face contact with the patient, however brief, the latter category currently has more people than the former category. So we have this whole layer of unseen bureaucracy in healthcare that's enormously expensive. And so we need to find ways to cut out the middleman that's working for the hospital compliance office, that's fighting with Medicare regarding reimbursement, the middleman at Medicare who's fighting with your hospital compliance office behind the scenes about reimbursement, and all the people who are not actually contributing to patient care that are just driving up costs. We need to find ways to decentralize our healthcare system with federal dollars. All that always comes with strings attached. We know that, right? And so whenever you get the federal government too involved in healthcare, and I'm not saying we can't have, it shouldn't have any federal regulation in healthcare, but healthcare really falls to the states to regulate. And the federal government's role should be minimal. And I think we can find ways to deliver more affordable care. In the closing chapters of The New Abnormal, I talk about some models that are out there of direct primary care, of cooperative programs that are competing now with health insurance programs, able to negotiate prices directly with physicians and providers and do all kinds of creative things to cut out the middleman. But that requires enough deregulation that we give doctors and small-scale localized healthcare systems room to maneuver and room to be able to operate without being swallowed up by the federal bureaucracy, without being swallowed up by the giant corporate conglomerates that are currently monopolizing healthcare in the United States.
Doctor, do these proposals you lay out in your book, The New Abnormal, do these proposals, are they possible to do while Obamacare is still in existence? And I ask that because I have no faith that the GOP is actually going to be able to repeal the freaking thing. Can we do these things while still under the burden of Obamacare is what I want to know.
We can to some extent. In fact, some of them are already being done in certain states and in certain regions. So there are creative workarounds. These bureaucratic hurdles do not make that easy, but it's not impossible. We need what the Czech dissidents of the 1970s called a parallel polis, basically parallel medical institutions that sort of opt out of the current system. And look, if the federal government decided to target any one or another of those small-scale initiatives, they could certainly crush it. If the corporate conglomerates decided to target these initiatives, they could swallow them up and put them out of business. But the idea of these Soviet dissidents living in the Czech Republic in the 1970s, Václav Havel, Václav Benda, others who wrote about this, was that you create so many of these that it's impossible to stomp them all out. So any one or another of them could be targeted for elimination by, you know, by the great beast. But if you have enough of them, basically eventually they start competing with the mainstream institutions. They circle back and start influencing those mainstream institutions because they grow, you know, significant enough that you can't ignore them anymore. I think a good analogy for what we need in medicine is actually the homeschooling movement, which started 50 years ago in the 1970s. And basically you were working outside the system. And back in the day, you know, don't tell the neighbors that we're homeschooling our own kids, that we're taking responsibility for their education, because they may call Child Protective Services and literally have us put in jail. But for decades, homeschoolers realized, no, we can actually educate our children better than the public school system. And we can prove that by winning the spelling bees and getting our kids into prestigious colleges. And doing a better job than others. Well, doctors are starting to prove that they can deliver better and more affordable healthcare if they're just left alone to do that. And so it's hard right now. It's sort of analogous to the way the pioneers of the homeschooling movement were operating in the 1970s. But I would like to see those parallel medical institutions grow in scope and in influence And, you know, basically today, homeschooling is now not only mainstreamed and permitted in all 50 states, but it has circled back and influenced the charter school movement. And to some extent, even the public schools, who now have to sort of compete with other people that are, you know, doing things better in many respects. It doesn't mean that every experiment in homeschooling succeeded, just like every experiment in creating new small scale healthcare delivery systems is not going to succeed. But we have to let those flowers bloom. We have to see which models work and which don't work. Maybe there's going to be regional variations, which is why you need to allow for some degree of localized control. So moving away from a centralized bureaucracy toward a more decentralized system, you know, if Republicans can do little things around the edges with deregulation and with dialing back a little bit of the top-down control, I think creative doctors and patient advocacy groups and so forth at the local level will have a little bit more elbow room to start maneuvering, and you'll start seeing some creative solutions happening.
Doctor, concierge medicine, it's something I've looked into myself, yeah. And I feel like it's something a lot of people are going to want, but it's so expensive now. Do you
That's
see
right.
that becoming yeah. bigger and more affordable for normal people?
So it is growing. Certainly it's physicians like it much better, and patients who can afford it like it much better. But as you just pointed out, the challenge is that it's very expensive. So it's going to be out of reach for most ordinary Americans. But there's a model known as direct primary care, which is sort of concierge like, but it's available for everyone. It involves physicians sort of taking control over small group practices and cutting out the insurance company and dealing directly with a pool of patients who basically subscribe to their services in order to get healthcare that is more affordable, precisely because it cuts out the middleman. And I think some of those models of direct primary care, they're analogous to concierge medicine, but they're proving to be economically sustainable and more affordable for a larger number of patients whose healthcare premiums, if they're paying for private insurance, have just gone through the roof in recent years, as all of us have probably experienced trying to, even if we're employed and our employer pays for part of our premiums, a big chunk of our private healthcare insurance, what comes out of our pocket to get decent insurance is often ridiculously expensive for ordinary American families. So I'm not saying that direct primary care is going to be the answer to everything, but it's one of the models that I discuss at the end of Making the Cut that's starting to gain traction, and in many cases, it's proving to be viable.
Doctor, thank you, as always. I appreciate it. Let's talk about the media. That's always fun. Before we do that, what do you take when you got to get a good night's sleep? Everyone has a thing. Maybe you went and got something at the pharmacy, maybe over the counter, maybe a prescription. But how do you feel in the morning? You're groggy and tired, aren't you? Groggy, tired. You don't feel better. You don't feel rested because you didn't get natural sleep. I like Dream Powder. I love Dream Powder from Beam because it's natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate, which is delicious. You would never know there's anything in it, but it has all those natural things you see right there on the screen in it. Magnesium, reishi, and all kinds of things. You just sip on a delicious cup of hot chocolate before bed and then drift off to sleep. And when you wake, that's the difference. You feel great. You want to save a bunch of money? Get a bag. shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. Let's talk about the communists. Let's talk about the media. Let's just talk about, well, a conversation we've had before about their mentality versus your mentality. You know, it's a religion of destruction and domination. And they are really never happy. They're never really satisfied because there's always something else you can control so you can destroy it. This is how the communist operates. It's one of the things that helps him. It oftentimes hurts him as well because he can't control his demonic nature. But you know what's wild? When Republicans complain about media bias. Ah, they're favoring the left. You're being honest about that. You look out and you see all this bias favoring the left and you're angry. And you're totally correct about that. But you want to hear something wild? When Democrats complain about the media, they should be doing more. If you do better reporting, why aren't you helping us? You scoff and throw your hands up and say things like, you control 95% of it. What are you talking about? But here's the thing. They're being honest too. Because the communist doesn't want 95% of the media. The communist wants 100% of the media. And until he has complete control over every word on the news, in the newspaper, on social media, he's not happy. So when Summer Lee says things like this, she means it.
We need our electorate behind us, all parts of our electorate. We need the media, and we rarely have the media. So how this story gets told is going to be a really important piece right now. They're going to have to go up against all of Trump's media apparatus, right? Social media owned by his cronies, legacy media that always has a little bit of a skew bias towards both sidesism. Both sidesism always benefits Republicans.
I know, that sounds crazy. What's she talking about? But again, she's a communist. She doesn't want 95%. All things should be working on behalf of the revolution. And if there's even one tiny thing that's not, the communist feels that he is under threat. What's the result of this? I want you to watch Jimmy Kimmel, and more specifically, Jimmy Kimmel's wife. I want you to watch this.
Thankfully, my immediate family all they did not vote for Donald Trump.
Okay.
They did the first time, a few of them. We flipped them the second time. It hurts me so much because of the personal relationship I now have where my husband is out there fighting this man. And to me, them voting for Trump is them not voting for my husband and me and our family. And I unfortunately have kind of lost relationships with people in my family because of it. Mm-hmm. This is not just Republican versus Democrat for me anymore. Mm-hmm. It is, to me, it's family values. And I'm angry all the time, which isn't healthy at all. But I like personalize everything now. When I see these terrible stories every day, I'm immediately mad at certain aunts, uncles, cousins who put him in power. And it's really hard. And I wish I could like deprogram myself in some way.
She said it. And you know what's wild? You can tell she knows it. She's been programmed. This is the benefit the communist has when he controls everything. When he has the control of so many of these institutions, he can program dumb losers like that woman. And after she is programmed, she will lose valuable relationships with family. She will be miserable, angry, bitter all the time. And she'll know it too. She'll know, she'll wake up in the morning with a scowl on her face and go to bed at night with a scowl on her face, completely destroyed from the inside out. That's why the communist wants control of all messaging. And even a tiny little bit escapes his grasp. It drives him insane. Remember that. We have Light in the Mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. That was a bit of a heavy show, so we thought it would be appropriate to lighten the mood and remind everybody, remind you, remind me, that as much as we may get frustrated from time to time with the current administration, boy, did we dodge a bullet in November.
I was aware of my opponent's strategy, and I wasn't about to fall prey or fall into those traps. And part of his strategy and those around him was to try and take me off our game and message. And I wasn't about to be distracted by those flames that he was trying to throw to get me away from my highest priority, which was talking to people about the economy and their well-being in terms of their financial well-being. And that's, so I was, I understood the game that was being played, and I made a decision that I wasn't going to get played. And
chestnut checkers, got it.
Chestnut checkers.
Yeah, three-dimensional chess, I'm telling you, you know.
Three-dimensional chess? Versus what other kind? I think, you know what? I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.